Good morning. I'm Kyle. I'm an alcoholic. And I was just sitting in my chair thinking, and you'll kind of find it's a theme throughout my story, but I just wanted to say that I love you all, and it's a great day to have a great day. And maybe most importantly is you're all enough, and I'm enough. You're all enough. Okay. That's probably the most emotional aspect of it. That, like, chokes me up. Okay. Anyway. So, yes. Quick stats. I am 35 years old. I have been sober for 18 months. And I grew up in St. Louis, Missouri. Typical Midwestern family. So I got a brother and a sister, 9 and 11 years older. So I may as well have been the only child. And I was pretty sheltered growing up, and I went to Catholic school, I went to an all boys high school, I would say we were the type of normal kind of passive aggressive family, I was even thinking this morning as I was going to repeat this, is like, what is so wrong with my childhood that there's some like guilt and embarrassment about it? Of, it's not like I was, I didn't have a home on a cul-de-sac, or I didn't get to go to school. My parents, I would argue, spoiled me. My mother probably overtold, in my opinion, that how much she loved me. And so, like, what do I have to complain about? And so I think, as I work through a lot of, shame, guilt, embarrassment and stuff like that from my whole story, which we'll get through, a lot of it is rooted in, with the love and care that I was provided, how did I turn out the way that I did? So kind of like walking and thinking through that. But yeah, I mean, so other than that, pretty typical childhood, right? I mean, I was a fat kid growing up. I was bullied a little bit in school. And so when I reflect and talk to my therapist, I think probably the, getting bullied in school probably had something to do with, as I continued to grow up, an aspect of me wanting to people please, me wanting to seek external validation, and that's going to become a big theme in my story as well. I went to church, so I was a Roman Catholic growing up, went to church every Sunday. I've made the joke in here before that, I go to church on Sunday, and if I'm good, I get to go to Blockbuster afterwards. So it was more of a, see and be seen than it was necessarily go and worship. It took me until I'm 35, right? So it took me until I was 33 to understand that religion and spirituality are not the same thing. So, going to Catholic school, I didn't care too much for God. I just, it seemed like, to me, the folks that I went to church with would go to church and then go to Applebee's after and yell at a 16-year-old waitress. So, that's my little joke there. But, so, we'll talk more about spirituality and religion later. My first traumatic experience, kind of working through my childhood here, is, when I was, I don't even know my age. I was between 8 and 10. I was sexually assaulted by a neighborhood kid around my same age. It was just that one time, and I can still visibly remember, like, my mom standing at the top of the stairs and, saying something, and, I guess that I ran up or whatever, and part of, I think, what I've worked through in relation to that event is that was never spoken about again. My dad found out 2 years ago about it. And that was kind of a theme of my family growing up, is I was perfect. We only discussed positive things. Anything negative or anything that required emotional capacity was swept under the rug. And we would largely result in just talking shit behind each other's backs. You know, that sounds a lot. I mean, I make it sound pretty bad, and I wanted to make sure when I was working through this last night that I didn't spend, like, my entire time, like, focusing on my parents or home life. But really the theme for me there is I grew up without any emotional intelligence. And so having, through this program, which, again, I'll get to later, the emotional intelligence aspect, that might be one of the things I'm most grateful for in my life. It's, well, let's come back to that. So I went through that event and I think I found through, again, working through it with my therapist, is that I didn't feel safe at home emotionally or mentally. I was physically, you know, protected, and I was, you know, given food and all that stuff like I mentioned, but there was no emotional safety. So, you know, fast forward, I went to an all boys high school taught by monks. And, I mean, I didn't give a shit, but, my next traumatic event, I mean, normal life. I mean, my first time drinking alcohol, I was in eighth grade, warm beer, you know, Midwestern kid, house party. House parties lasted about an hour before the cops showed up and everyone ran. So, but, you know, as I advanced into middle school, high school age, I wanted to fit in, and I was going to be the person or do the things that made people like me. Again, another theme is the whole idea of external validation. So that would mean, you know, trying to get, I eventually got to the point where, trying to get beer or going to parties and trying to be the center of attention or doing dumb shit or whatever it was, just to try to, like, seek attention. And I would always, growing up, like, focus, because not everybody's going to like me because I'm bombastic and I can be a little bit too much sometimes, but, like, I would always, there's always somebody that doesn't like me, and I would focus on that person. I would say, why doesn't that person like me? I'm going to make them like me. And I would, and they, like, I don't know, it just, so, anyway, it was all about people pleasing there. When I was 16, I guess the most traumatic event is I had my driver's license for 4 months. And I flipped my car under the influence with four people in the car, and none of those people had seatbelts on. Even thinking about it now, almost 20 years ago, it just seems like a figment of my imagination, but I think that was probably, and I didn't even realize at the time, probably my first real spiritual experience, because obviously the fact that everyone walked away relatively unscathed, scientifically that seems low to me, low probability. So reflecting on it now, I like to think at least that maybe God had a plan for me where, you know, that didn't end up worse, and it very much could have. So, I got a DWI when I was 16. That allowed me to not drink for at least a year. I also didn't have a license. But then, you know, senior year of high school came, and that's when, like, you know, the blackouts, you know, started happening. So when we would go to parties or whatever, I would have a propensity to blackout. And I thought that was normal. And a lot of it was rooted in, like, anxiety, like being in these big crowds where I thought everyone was looking at me and everyone was, like, judging me, and I wanted everybody to like me. So, you know, it was very much, taking that kind of, inside self manufactured anxiety and stuff off me. So that's why, you know, blackout started occurring senior year of high school. But yeah, I mean, I finished high school. I moved from St. Louis to Atlanta here to go to Emory to play baseball. And, so, you know, all is manageable. All is fine, I guess. And, baseball didn't work because I prioritized drinking and fraternity life over, you know, grades and athletics. So, very much into the, you know, fraternity scene and lived in the fraternity house for 3 years. And what that did, it taught me a few things is it created an OCD complex within me because fraternity is a shit house. And, I'm a garbage can. I'll take anything you put in front of me. So, sophomore year, I became a pothead, and I was a pothead from sophomore year until I was about 28, 27. And when I started drinking, you know, recreational drugs were available. Yeah, hell yeah, why not? Cocaine, Xanax, Adderall, whatever. And so college was largely a blur. And, you know, college was college. I mean, it was 4 years, but, you know, there's not like a ton of, I don't know, memories that immediately jump to mind. But, otherwise, college I managed, I got through. Ended up, you know, was able to get a job and I moved to Chicago. In Chicago, very work hard, play hard attitude, of course. I want to do everything at 100%. So that meant, I work really hard. During the day, I work long hours if I need to do whatever it takes to impress my superiors to get their approval. And then I would, go get blasted after, you know, especially on the weekends. I wasn't drinking every day in my younger 20s necessarily, but I would, you know, black out, take Molly, go to a concert, whatever it was, or ecstasy or MDMA, whatever you want to call it, I guess. Who knows what it was, but it wasn't fentanyl, at least back in those days. So I'm very fortunate for that. But blackouts occurred quite frequently. The next iteration there is because of the type of work I do, I travel a lot. First 10 years of my professional career, Monday through Thursday, every week, I was going somewhere. And, you know, that meant a couple of things. One is an expense account. Two is everything's free, so I can, my drinking started picking up because I would work in the evenings, and I don't want to work in the evenings, so I'm going to drink while I'm working. So that kind of picked up drinking becoming more frequent. And, when I met my wife in 2011 and, you know, my friends within a first couple of years had said something to her like, I think he's got a problem or something of that. And that made me angry. Because I was like, what do you mean? Everyone, you know, goes out and blacks out every weekend and does a bunch of cocaine and, you know, whatever. But I guess that wasn't accurate. I was kind of living in my own little blur world, but so that was a lot of my young 20s is, when I was drinking, it was, frequently blackouts. I eventually moved back to Atlanta because my wife was, we were doing long distance because she lives in Atlanta and I was living in Chicago, but I met her here. So I moved back down to Atlanta and, we got married. I mean, again, I was professionally successful, you know, seemingly keeping it all together. I was drunk on my own independence. I thought I was invincible. I could do whatever I want. No one could tell me what to do. I deserve it. I guess I said that a lot. I deserve it. Worked so hard. My life, blah, blah, blah. And so, we got married. And within 3 months, my wife was pregnant with our first daughter. So my first daughter was born in 2016, and that was a big turning point in my drinking career. Speaking of, I deserve it, and I work so hard and bullshit. Like, with me up until this stint of sobriety, work was number one. Because I was so focused on succeeding and getting approval and, you know, making, like, sprinting to the top. And I started this with saying, you're enough and I'm enough, because nothing has ever been good enough. Regardless of the achievement, I would say, all right, sweet. Oh, that's great. Where's the, what's the next mountain? So if I got promoted at work or something, let's say, I would say, okay, great. When's the next promotion? Okay, great. What's next? And, that just, I literally, again, 33 years of my life, not once lived in the present. It was always, I was always trying to prepare myself for retirement. So like, I didn't want to live until I was 65 or 70. So that was something I had to learn too. But when my daughter was first born, that's when, drinking, progressed, for me. So at this point, my daughter was born. I didn't smoke pot anymore. I didn't do anything else, until later I started stealing my wife's Adderall, but we'll get to that. So my daughter was born and, that was hard. I don't think anyone can prepare anyone else for what is really required to take care of an infant, a newborn. And it was a lot of work. And I was still traveling. I traveled within 2 weeks of her being born up to New York. And it wasn't fair on my wife either. So my wife made a lot of sacrifices for me, obviously, because of the drinking thing, but also because of work. So I'm trying to like kind of repay some of that now, but, I would travel during the week. I would come home and then I would go on a 3-day bender. And I would it started where I moved off of drinking beer more frequently and only doing liquor on the weekends or whatever. I would, you know, it started becoming vodka. So I thought I could conceal it. And, so it became more secretive drinking at this point once my daughter was born. It became throughout the day as well. So the weekend would start. It'd be Friday night and my wife would go to bed. So we would like do shifts or something, but I would be drinking while my wife was sleeping. And then, you know, we'd kind of fumble our way through the night and then, I would usually let her sleep in and I would get up at whatever, 5:30, 6, 6:30, whatever. Excuse me. And it wasn't uncommon that I was hungover. How do I fix the hangover? I start drinking again. And so the sort of the long bottom that I was in emotionally and mentally, I was a physical shell from about 2016 to 2021-ish. It was all, when can I get my next drink? So now, you know, up until this point, work. Shame on me, you know, family, wife, whatever, myself. I obviously didn't give a shit about myself, but then now it was vodka. It was all centered around when do I get. I like quit drinking beer and wine in public. I go to all sorts of dinners and whatever and I wouldn't do anything. But then the minute I had, you know, a chance to skip off or sneak away, I had a pint of Pinnacle hidden somewhere. That was the next 4 or 5 years is, where do I have, you know, how do I make sure that I always have something stashed somewhere that I can go get? And speaking of never living in the moment, I definitely couldn't live in the moment there because I would just be thinking about when I can skip off, when people are going to leave me alone, and that's when I also started to isolate. So, but at the same time, you know, in my insanity, I thought for some reason I deserved it. Well, my life is so hard. I got to work, and I got a wife, and I got a kid. Look at all these things that require my attention, you know. There was never an attitude of gratitude
And so, you know, things managed. And then my second daughter was born 2 years later, 2018. And, you know, this was my first of, okay, Kyle's got to pull it back. Got to be normal. Got to be a gentleman, because I obviously knew I had a problem, because I said to myself, there's no way I could keep this up with two kids, right? A 2-year-old and a newborn. I got to do it again. I get to do whatever. And I maybe lasted 2 weeks, and then I was back at it. And then I got put on a work project that was high intensity, and it was Sunday to Friday in Virginia every week. And that's when I started also, you know, having pints in my hotel room, and I wouldn't drink at work at this point, but then the pandemic hit, and I was, you know, that allowed me to drink all day every day because I was at home. We lived in North Druid Hills at the time. We moved to Ackworth a year and a half ago, but we lived in North Druid Hills at the time, and because our house was small enough where I would work in the garage. Oh, what a perfect place to work, as I had plenty of places to hide in the garage. And, you know, this created a lot of consternation with my wife. Like, she knew I had a problem. We'd have our outbursts and disagreements, but I was already a lost cause at that point. I don't know. Like, I already couldn't help myself. I just didn't know it yet. And I knew I was an alcoholic, and I just didn't care. I was too chicken shit, I was too chicken shit to commit suicide, but I hated everything. I loathed myself. I hated having to get up for work. I was depressed. And I just assumed, I was like, all right, well, I'm just not going to live very old. I'm probably going to kick it early. And I was okay with that at that point. Then my wife got pregnant again. Three girls. 18 months apart from my second daughter. The day she went into labor, I was drunk. And I'm pretty sure I drove her to the hospital. And I say pretty sure. I woke up from my days just in time for her to give birth. And I hope, that was bad. That was also pretty bad. But I mean, no serious consequences. Right? But it got to the point after my third daughter was born that, okay, I gotta finally start trying to do something. 10 minutes, I can do this in 10 minutes. I call an IOP, an inpatient out program. My wife did some research for me, and I gotta, you know, maybe start taking the first step. I was never going to AA. I just need to drink like a gentleman. I called. I never went. And the same kept happening. It was a vicious cycle. Wake up, 6:30, drink, pass out probably around 12 or 1. I could blame it on all these kids I had to take care of. Get up, keep going. Vicious cycle. Every day was just, I was trying to get through it as fast as possible. But I didn't really have a light at the end of the tunnel. If I was trying to get through the day so fast, what was I getting to? What was the carrot? I could never attain it. So I finally went to an IOP evening program. This was in December 2020. And I half-assed the shit out of it. I mean, I thought I was suave and smooth, and I could act like this, you know, overly confident in cases, but I was little on the inside. Very little. I thought I could out-game the system, because I would drink in the morning. I would stop long enough that I could pass a breathalyzer when I got to IOP, and my, you know, dense headed brain at the time figured there's no way they're going to test for alcohol in a pee test. That's why they do the breathalyzer. I'm not smoking weed, so I'll pass the pee test. Anyway, I got kicked out of IOP because I failed the piss test, of course. And, I mean, but the whole thing in there is like, for me at least, that IOP was fantastic. I definitely didn't fully take advantage of it. The one thing that I didn't realize at the time is I was going to IOP to try to fix my alcoholism. But there was no discussion or focus on what makes me an alcoholic, so to speak. But it was the first step. It allowed me to start thinking about it, the smallest modicum of acceptance that maybe I was an alcoholic. And so then I tried going to AA, and it was somebody from IOP that goes here, that goes to Knights Forum, Greg. He brought me here because we moved to Ackworth. We sold our house, moved to Ackworth. And, I mean, sit in the back of the rooms drunk. I would tell my wife, ooh, AA was a perfect excuse to get out by myself, because I'd tell my wife I'm going to a meeting. I'd go sit in the parking lot and drink. And, there was at least one time where I woke up and I was the only car in the parking lot. And I don't, like, my intention isn't to glorify, like, I'm not, this isn't, these aren't, like, I don't know, this is just how I'm presenting, but I'm not, like, I don't want to come off as, like, glorifying or proud, but, I mean, it's not, so that's not what I'm trying to get off at, but, so I did get a sponsor, and my sponsor, you know, very rigid, punitive almost, I would argue, and I didn't like that. But I had a sponsor, and this was in the early spring 2021. My longest stint of sobriety, 45 days, during that kind of IOP period. And, we never really, I mean, I wasn't willing to do any of the steps yet. So I had a sponsor, and he put up with my bullshit. We eventually get to a point where the bottom drops out for me. April 2021, I had a, you know, during midweek bender, Wednesday, Thursday, you know, work is starting to take notice. I'm obviously less productive at work. I'm a physical shell at home. And a Friday, I drove down into the city to go to the house that we just sold to, I don't know, do some shit before it closed and the other people moved in. And, you know, I'd started the morning off taking, siphoning some of my wife's Adderall, and then was drinking. And I finished up at the house and I drove over to Phipps to go pick up cigars. And my wife called, and this was, you know, couldn't have been more than 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And she could tell. I mean, she's perceptive. My left eye starts drooping. Obviously, I try to speak like a human being, but an adult male, but I slur, and she could immediately tell on the phone. And she's, you know, obviously, don't drive, sit right there. I'm going to call people. She, you know, she's concerned, to put it nicely. And, next thing I know, I got my sister-in-law and my brother and my parents and my sponsor. Everyone's calling me. My father-in-law's calling me. And, you know, this was the kind of like demoralization aspect where, you know, where it was always kind of an unknown secret that Kyle's got a drinking problem. Now it was really made public, so to speak, I guess you could say. So my father-in-law talked, you know, embarrassment. My father-in-law had to drive over. By the way, I had already broken down emotionally and was like, I cried a lot in those last few days or weeks because I was just so defeated, but I didn't think there was anything I could do, and I was unwilling to still seek the help. So my father-in-law came to pick me up, and up until that point, I was just like crying to my sponsor on the phone. So, you know, bless his heart for at least you know, being around and being available in those times. And then I had to like sit like an idiot as my father-in-law drove me back up here to Ackworth. And, alright, I'm going to rehab. So I agreed to go to rehab. This is where the story, starts getting a little bit better. Go to rehab that next Monday. I loved rehab. I would go back to rehab. I very much enjoyed it. One, because I never really, gave an effort to focus and learn about myself. And so when I got to rehab, I was, went for 30 days, and I was determined to put my best foot forward and try to like learn and learn about myself. And that is something I had never done before. So a ton of themes started coming up. First of all, I cried at rehab quite a bit too, but just because of shame and guilt and remorse and all that crap. But there's so many things I learned about myself. One, there was, Kyle's identity didn't exist. I had no clue who I was, 34 years old or however I was old I was at the time. I did not know who I was. We had a group discussion on passion. What's your passion? I don't have a passion. I don't know. What? I don't have a passion. Drinking. Religion, spirituality, I didn't know the difference. But this would all, rehab would start me on the path to reflect within and start taking the steps to develop emotional and spiritual intelligence. Because even though I went to church, I didn't have any spiritual intelligence either. The major spiritual experience I define for myself is sitting at rehab. There was a group discussion on legacy. What legacy are you going to leave behind? Unexplainable. Something just happened. Like it just, like power, not power, but like some influence in my head of what legacy am I leaving for my kids? Mostly. My wife. And, it kind of like all made, like, cause I'm analytical, so I think in like equations and math problems and, like that kind of like made sense all of a sudden, the legacy aspect. And so working with my therapist there, going back to the whole this idea of people pleasing and perfectionism and shit. So as we kind of built out this tree of Kyle to further define who I am, I have issues with self-love, self-worth, self-acceptance, self-value, and all of those seeds planted create a tree of bearing fruit of addiction and alcoholism and perfectionism and people pleasing and this and that. And that was also the first time I mentioned in IOP we were focusing on my alcoholism, which I needed to do obviously. But now all of a sudden I was focusing on the root causes that create my mental and emotional instability that alcohol cures. So now I sort of had my root cause and 30 days of rehab. By the way, my therapist at rehab was amazing. I miss her. Rehab finished. 31 days sober. Breakfast club. Started coming in the mornings just because that's what worked with my schedule. And, you know, a lot of familiar faces that were here. Sat at that table right there with Jesse. And until she kicked me out. So now, you know, what do I do now? So I got a new sponsor. Hey. I got a new sponsor and, started working the steps. Took me 9-ish months to do the steps, something like that. And what's been most important for me is what I talked about at the beginning is, I cannot sustainably live a life where I try to give 100% to everything. 100% to my kids, to drinking, to work. I need to be okay with imperfection, and I need to be okay knowing that I am enough. And so I try to live in the present as much as I can, not always feasible. It's okay to be not okay. And when things go to shit, or when things go bad, I've been called flippant multiple times by people. I didn't even know what that word meant. What the fuck does flippant mean? It means I don't give a shit about anything. That is not true. I give shit about a lot of things. But the program has taught me that in the grand scheme of things, I think it was Tim said something beautiful around this, and I wrote it down, but I can't remember what it is. But basically, like, it was beautiful. Do I know what it is? No. He said something, it was something to the extent of, like, in the grand scheme of things, nothing, these things don't matter. Nothing is important. Or, well, nothing is of magnitude that we make it. And so when something goes wrong on this day or that day, I try to take a step back and like, who gives a shit? I had a bad meeting, or this person's mad at me, or who gives a shit? In the grand scheme of things, like the things that I have, I am so completely blessed and lucky that why would I get my panties in a bunch on... Why did I use that metaphor? Why would I get all upset over something like that? And then I remember, here are the things that I'm blessed for. And so, but even allowing me to, for my mind to go in those directions of gratitude and thankfulness and love, like that's something that my higher power has given me the ability to do, like more inherently, plus practice through the program. Now, it's certainly for me progress over perfection. I'm not all that. I'm not a Bible thumper or big book thumper. I could do better about calling people. I could do better about this and this, sure. But at the end of the day, if I remember and I like how my sponsor Robert says steps 1 through 3 every day, I know that, that everything's going to be okay if I go back and rethink steps 1 through 3. And I'll leave with, I know what my passion is. Oh crap, I'm going to get emotional. My passion is, I love people. I love being of service to people, but not like in the way of I need to do it to get some sort of validation in return. I just like seeing smiles on people's faces, and, I think everyone sort of deserves that. And so I think, you know, that's what I've figured out over 18 months is my passion is being of service. And the last thing I'm going to say is I couldn't empathize with parents back in my addiction who say that, like, when you have kids, there's this undeniable, unconditional love and all that stuff. I didn't have that. In my addiction because I couldn't really feel. And so now in sobriety, like those three kids are, I don't know. It's just, parents out there will know that I can now finally like empathize and I understand the love that comes with having and raising a child. So, thanks.